Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting PFGWM. Or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com. Or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
Good morning and welcome to Investing Simplified. It's another Saturday and we are without our usual host with the most, Chuck Price, as he is escaping the cold weather. He's out in Arizona and he's watching some baseball. He's a big Mariner fan, as you guys have heard, and playing some golf, so it must be nice, right? But with me in studio is Kevin Stege, Baker Colson, CPA. Excuse me. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Bo.
And also, I'd like to introduce, we have a special guest today, Taylor Cattell with the KG Law Group. Good morning, Taylor.
Good morning, Bo.
So, as a lot of listeners know, we like to have an estate attorney, a CPA, and a financial advisor with us at all times to answer questions. So, it's worth reiterating, now is the time. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. There is no bad question about your money, about your estate planning, about your tax planning. Give us a call. We have a great show planned for you, but as you know, we'd rather answer the questions that you have rather than listen to us gab. But Taylor, I'd like, if you don't mind, kind of introduce yourself to the audience.
My name is Taylor Cattell. I do estate planning and probate, trust administration, everything in that realm. I'm an attorney. I have a year and a half old son, a dog who's adorable, and a lot of things to think about in my own estate plan that comes up all the time with my practice and my clients. About half of my practice is estate planning, preventative medicine, so to speak, looking ahead and saying, how do I make sure the bad things don't happen? How do I make sure I'm taken care of? And the other half is what I call administration. There's been an event, whether it's incapacity or death, and we got to do something about it, whether it's how do you use the power of attorney? There was no power of attorney. What do I do now? How do we go through the court systems with guardianship, conservatorship, or someone died? What do I do? There's a will, there isn't a will, there's a trust. How does it work? Guiding my clients through that process. So I kind of run the gamut in that area, and it's never boring. There's always something to keep me on my toes. It's a really fascinating area of law.
Perfect. Well, we're glad to have you. I mean, I know Kevin and I were talking with you before the show started, but we have a lot of questions where we can say, hey, I know enough to be dangerous about this, or I know this is my experience. So I know we'll hopefully get some folks to call in with those questions that have been burning and that they haven't been able to ask. So I want to talk about a little bit, give you a little bit of market update. I know Chuck usually likes to do that when we start the show. And just year to date so far, some numbers. The NASDAQ is up 12.93%. So Chuck is looking sort of like a Swami, still saying that he's got double-digit returns for the year.
2019.
Right, 2019, yeah. double-digit returns. The Dow Jones is up 11.5%. And the S&P 500 is up 11.26%, which kind of has turned around a little bit of the outlook that Chuck and I have talked about for the last decade and a half, that the NASDAQ hasn't been outperforming the Dow Jones, the kind of slow movers. It's not by a lot, but right now you're getting an extra 100 basis points or so, a little extra 1% to be in those riskier stocks. So it's nice to see that that has turned around, at least for the start of the year, that those riskier assets are performing well, that you're getting a little bit of the return based upon taking some of those higher risks, but doesn't mean it's going to continue. And like we tell Chuck all the time, it's doesn't mean that we know actually what's going to happen. Hopefully, if it stayed just like this, then he does look like a genius. But then you're going to start guaranteeing 10% returns for people, right? Or you're going to say, we're going to guarantee it.
I was just going to ask you, Chuck, we've never got him to commit to a guaranteed rate over the airs, and I was wondering if you were going to do that for us.
No, I'm not going to. I mean, I was born at night, but not last night, is the phrase that I've heard. But no, I'm not going to make any of those kind of guarantees. It would be nice to see that continue. But I do agree. I think Chuck is right. As the national debt continues to grow, and it really is worrisome, how are we going to pay off that national debt? And then I think at some point that has to come due. I think with a lot of the political turmoil that's been happening, I think that there's going to continue to be volatility. I think the fact that we're up almost 13% is a nice rebound from December and how the horrible December. But it reminds me of, you know, the last couple of years where we had these big upswings and then everyone gets real excited and says, hey, I want to get going now. But then they end up getting in right before the market goes down. And actually, we have our first caller. It looks like Henry is on the line, has a question about refunds. So, Henry, go ahead. What's your question?
Good morning.
Good morning, Henry.
There have been several people on television, ordinary citizens. I've talked to people that I know that have had this happen, and maybe Kevin can shed some light on this. What's happened is their income is the same, their deductions are the same, everything's the same. They don't make a huge amount of money. Their income is modest. Why are they giving up two-thirds, in some cases, more income tax back to the IRS and getting such a minuscule refund? Do you know anything about this? Have you experienced this with your clients, Kevin?
Hello, Henry. It's good to hear from you again. Yes, actually, I feel like I should be giving you a payment after the show. You have directly looked at my notes for something I was going to talk about today. So I will talk about it now, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Okay. So, no, Henry, I haven't seen that, although I haven't done a huge volume of tax returns. In general, what we are seeing is, and I'd have to agree with this news article that said about 85% of people are having a lower tax liability due to the new tax law changes. 10% are staying the same, and 5%, it's going up. Their tax liability is going up. For the most part, the only ones we're seeing going up, but this is probably specific to our segment of clients that we do, is our high net worth individuals. Their taxes have really gone up a lot, actually, mainly because of the cap on the state income tax deduction. You know, when you're paying $100,000 in state taxes and that gets chopped to $10,000 deductible, you don't recover from that, so to speak.
That seems. I've noticed, and tell me if this is incorrect, but I've noticed also homeowners are having a harder time if they were itemizing before. But let's say especially in Multnomah County, where property taxes are pretty high, and now if you have an $8,000 property tax and you can only write off $10,000 total between that and
your state income tax,
then you're kind of limiting that as well, right?
Right. Blue states in general suffered a bit through this, and it probably makes the game fairer across the whole country, because we've talked about this before, and I'll answer your question here, Henry. I'm on a little bunny trail here, but you know, somebody in Washington was paying, that had the exact same situation as somebody in Oregon, was paying more tax to the IRS than the Oregonian was, because the Oregonian was writing off more local taxes, and this levels a playing field. But back to your question, there is a segment, and I call it the donut hole, of maybe your fixed income folks, people that are somewhere, you know, around 25 to 50,000 of income, and it depends on what your deductions and stuff were, you potentially could be paying a little more tax. Now, it's not a huge amount. There's really no way it could be, unless you have very little income and, you know, large deductions. But even then, we're just talking a small percentage. The dollar amount really shouldn't be too bad. But one thing I wanted to bring up, and that is some of what I feel is some misinformation in the news out there about this whole scenario. And this is an example I'll give you. And that is, so you go to McDonald's one day and you buy a burger for $5. You give them $20 for the burger. They give you $15 in change. You're pretty happy. You got a $5 burger and $15 in your pocket and a full stomach. So the next day you go to a burger joint and the burger's on sale. It's now $4. And you give them $5 to pay for that burger, and they give you a buck change. And now you're mad because you only got a dollar change refund instead of 15 that you got the day before. So clearly, I don't need to explain that anymore. The tax liability has gone down, and just because your withholdings are less and they've adjusted the withholding tables, your refund may be smaller, but you got more money during the year. So that is most likely when they're talking about, hey, I'm getting a smaller refund. Refund's not the story. It's the tax liability that's the story.
Sure, maybe they've overpaid less because they're withholding the right amount or they're withholding less. And I know Oregon just came out for 2019, right, I think, as adjustments to this new tax law with having a new W-4 that your employer should be coming out and saying, hey, you need to refill out an Oregon-specific W-4 because the withholding tables may have been a little skewed. Maybe, and that's the experience that I've had where clients have said, that as they adjust the withholdings, it's not, like you said, it's not that their tax liability is higher, it's that they were withholding improperly, which I know the IRS has said, and correct me if the number is wrong, has said, if
these
you are,
people stayed at zero with, on the W-4, then what's happened is the woman on television said that everything was the same, to dollar for dollar, and she had to give $8,000 payment back to the IRS. The gentleman that I know, he was getting a $3,000 refund last year with almost the same figures, and he only gets $1,000 this year. And those are just a couple of examples. So I just wondered if it was across the board or if this is just an anomaly, just two cases.
I think it's again more of just an anomaly reset where they're fitting into their particular tax situation. Maybe they were paying less taxes all these years and than other folks, and now it's kind of being leveled out. That's generally what I'm seeing. I'm not defending it one way or the other, but that's just generally what I'm seeing, is that it's kind of a reset, and some folks are hurt a little more than others. I'd love to see those numbers and really analyze them. And find out where the differences are, but obviously I can't do that. So
right. But I think it's probably anomalous.
My return taken care of the end of the month of March, near the end. And if I call back and my voice is raised and my BP is up, you'll know that I fit into this scenario that I've just talked about.
Perfect.
Well, you can shoot me a copy of your tax return, and we'll talk about it over the air, Henry.
Okay.
All right, Henry, thank you. That's a good question, and we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back from our break, we're going to let Kevin finish the tax investigator, or as we discovered last week, he's actually preferring to be called the tax animal now. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so that clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsonlaw.com.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin, 503-417-9595, or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and again, we welcome your calls, 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. Great question from Henry. Yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and have you ever been part of a news story, and you have been at the incident, or you have firsthand knowledge of the account, and then you see how it's presented in the news, and it's like, that's not what happened. Anyway, it seems like anything I've had knowledge of, it's like, maybe it's just my weird perspective. I don't know. Could be one, you know,
and like you said, we don't know, you know, Henry Scott, he talking to those folks, and he said the one gal was on the television, so, you know, it'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure he'll give us a call and let us know how his situation went.
That's right. Well, today on the Tax Investigator, I thought I would talk a little generically. You know, Carl, our resident estate planning attorney, he always had his top 10 lists and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought I'd kind of come up with a little bit of a list this time of key ways, and this is probably where I get most of my questions, is somebody comes in with a new business, or they maybe had a large windfall or a capital gain, and they're like, all right, Give me some tax planning that the big boys do. You know, I want the Trump version of this, and you know, how can I really save the taxes? Well, it's not always that laid out. There's a number of things to look at, and I thought I would present some of those concepts. I guess I should say that you can be thinking about. And there's more than that. These are just some that I came up with about midnight last night as I was falling asleep. But that's the best I can do today.
So you're not going to give us an exhaustive 2-hour breakdown of? No, okay.
I won't do that.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, actually, there's some firms out there who they're like attorneys and CPAs, and they are hired. I have some clients who hire these firms that they're. Whole purpose is to work with the client's attorney and CPA to structure tax saving strategies. And again, we're talking at the higher end of planning and stuff. That's not for everybody, but we can still cull some ideas from them. And the more and more I work with some of them, I find out, you know, they're just taking an aggressive stance on on tax law we already know, but just taking a more aggressive stance and how to present that and document it, and hopefully not make you be an example with the IRS to the rest of the nation.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, the first thing I do is, and obviously very generically here, but maximize deductions. That's quite often overlooked, especially when a small business comes to me, sits down and says, okay, when I tell them, okay, you're going to be paying 40% of your profits in taxes, self-employment and income taxes, they're like, whoa, how do we get that down? Well, the first thing is just be smart about your deductions. Look for the various areas you can get it. Do you have a home office? Do you have mileage? Do you, you know, are you taking a good portion of your cell phone that's used for business and obviously not the portion that's used for personal purposes? So looking at all the various deductions, making sure you get those in there. That usually involves having a decent accounting system. That's where I think most deductions get missed is somebody is not tracking everything. They're just trying to write them down or what have you. So maximize your deductions. Another tax savings method that we use once we're after the end of the year and you've maximized your deductions is we look at like equipment purchases. Year-end purchase of vehicles or equipment, things you need in your business as it's growing. Obviously, individual tax returns can't take advantage of that because you're not in business. But those are good ways to defer taxes into another year and save your cash and be able to use that cash to grow. Another thing is, and this is where your CPA comes in, is how can you change the nature of your income? Instead of self-employment income that is taxed at the worst, the highest rates, I should say, can we change that? Instead of taking a ton of salary from your business, can we reduce that reasonably and take distributions instead, which are going to save self-employment taxes? Or maybe we set up as a partnership where you have a passive partner, maybe a spouse, who's not subject to self-employment taxes. So you're saving some in the nature of it's passive income instead of active income. So, or changing from short-term capital gains, which get the worst tax rate, to long-term capital gains, maybe holding, you know, a little longer. So the nature of the income is important to look at and plan and try to get a more favorable treatment there. And then there's timing of income. Can you not report income in the current year, defer it into the next year? Installment sales, it can be a good way to save taxes. Instead of taking a huge windfall in 1 year, you spread it out over several years. And hopefully stay in lower rates. And the 0% long-term rate is a very good rate.
Right. Free 93 is a good price. Right?
Free 93. Hadn't heard that one. That's good. Or taking advantage of provisions where you can exclude income altogether, if that's possible. And there's many ways to do that.
I got a question for you. So what are the changes that you're seeing so far? Major changes for 2018 returns with the tax laws. I mean, I get that question all the time. I talk about estate tax. I leave income tax to the experts, but estate tax is so high now for most people. Oregon got its own level, and we'll talk about that if that's of interest to anybody but me.
Yes, no.
But income taxes is a much bigger issue, and there's a lot of changes and a lot of questions. Are there any major changes that you're seeing so far?
Mainly, I would say for our businesses. And then deductions for individuals. Obviously, planning the new 20% deduction for businesses, there's a lot involved with that. And I won't even go into all the scenarios. Depends what type of business you are, you know, potentially how much wages or how much capital investments you have. So that's added a lot of time, but has been very beneficial to our businesses. And then, of course, on the individual level, the change to the itemized deductions, people are having to reset, and especially, and, you know, we said this a year ago, and people are just now finding it out. Employees who spent money for their employer that they weren't reimbursed for, a lot of times it's a per diem when you're traveling, especially our over-the-road truckers and such. And you're taking the unreimbursed employee expense deduction, that whole section's just gone. And when you're talking for some of those truckers who it's factored into their paycheck that they're going to cover those costs, and now those costs aren't deductible because 2% itemized deduction section is just gone. You know, we were saying a year ago, you got to go renegotiate that contract. You got to figure out a way to get those reimbursed and change things. So
right, because that's still reimbursable at the business level, right?
It is, so
if you have employees, and that's a big thing to think about as an employer, to give a benefit to your employees, it's something that they were paying, and you were taking that into effect in their paychecks. If they get to, they're deducting that those expenses, is maybe look at, hey, let's establish an expense account that then the employer can deduct that expense, and you figure out renegotiating the contract so it's still deductible.
Exactly right. Yeah.
That makes sense. And then that talked a little bit about the 20%. What I've noticed, and it's prevalent because we were telling Kevin earlier, but Taylor and I met through my wife, and they work out together, and they have a mom's group. And so Taylor's a mom, my wife is a mom. And so folks that have kids, especially multiple kids, how is that sort of, because along the same lines that, you know, Henry was talking about, I hear people saying, well, I don't get my, because we used to get a $4,000 exemption, right, for each kid. And so folks that have a lot of kids don't anymore, but they're getting a $2,000 credit.
Yep.
So how does that, do you see that sort of balancing out?
Yeah, in most cases, and again, some are benefiting more than others. Losing a $4,000 credit per kid, deduction per kid, hurts a little bit, but then if the child is under a certain age, the credit goes from $1,000 to $2,000. So that typically more than makes up for the loss of deduction. However, if you have a, and I just had this scenario in a child that's doesn't get the tax credit, maybe someone's still living at home, they may qualify for a $500 credit and maybe not, and of course no deduction, and that's now you might be hurt a little bit. So
sure, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, and Taylor, you mentioned a little bit, you know, of interest, the estate tax. We talk about that a lot on the show because we have a lot of listeners who are in Oregon, and that comes up a bit. That's a big question for Oregon having having that $1 million estate tax. And we actually have a caller on the line, but I'd like to get back to that. So if we can remember, but Phil has some income tax comments for Kevin.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, Phil.
Enjoy your program. I had my taxes done on Monday. And it was about what it was last year. And but what I had in my favor was my tax preparer contacted me a year ago to make sure everything was in order.
Very good.
And so because I had the deductions figured out and that she knew what they were going to be, I got back this year about what I got back last year, which I used to pay my property taxes. But anyway, so I can see people being surprised. But fortunately, my tax preparer was on top of it.
Well, very good, Phil. That's a good word. I'm glad you let us know on that, because that's, to me, stick with that person because they were looking ahead for you. There's always, you can always walk into a big box tax prep place and they'll, after the fact, you know, do what they can. But if you have somebody looking forward for you, that there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, she was very helpful to me. So I want to give you at least that my example anyway.
No, perfect. Yeah, thank you, Phil. And that's a good point that it's worth noting definitely that if you're looking ahead and you're prepping for it, just kind of speaks to what we were talking about of there are different deductions this year, but the tax liability is a moving target. So as long as you're working with someone who's helping you to hit that moving target. So thank you, Phil. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Thanks for listening and thanks for calling. So that's worth noting. We have lots of stuff to talk about it. We're going to take a break here in a minute, and I'd like to come back and have Taylor talk a little bit more about that estate tax. And that basic question actually brings up a good segue, because we talk about all the time that folks are do-it-yourselfers for taxes. And a lot of times you can be doing that, but maybe some of those folks that Henry was talking about were do-it-yourselfers that aren't prepping, and that can be some pitfalls with your tax planning. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Taylor about some of those pitfalls of do-it-yourself estate planning, because we do get that question a lot in our practice. So, but when we come back, give us a call. We have a lot of things to talk about, but we'd like to talk about what you want to talk about. So that number is 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group. Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future, and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. I'm Bo Caldwell. And to remind you, in studio, we have Kevin Stege with Baker & Coulson CPA and Taylor Cattell with KG Law Group. And Taylor, I'd like to kind of just lay the carpet out for you, give you the floor. We talked about, you know, you get questions a lot about some self-preparing estate situations. What are some of the pitfalls? What have you noticed in your practice that people come across? And I know callers and folks that are listening would love to hear kind of some things to look out for.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate Phil's comment about his tax preparer and the fact that they were looking ahead. That's true with all of your professionals. If you have a financial advisor and you don't know his or her name, they're not talking to you and giving you the heads up, hey, here's what's coming down the pipe and you need to be aware of, here's how you might want to change your situation. Same idea with estate planning. If you have a change in your life, you don't automatically think, oh, well, some people do, but most people don't automatically think, I want to go see an attorney again. No, nobody likes to see attorneys. I don't like to see attorneys.
And you are an attorney.
And I am an attorney. I got a lot of friends who are attorneys. And it's not that we're all bad people. It's just not. It's stressful. You think it's going to be really expensive. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's less than you think. But seeing an attorney, seeing having a professional team who can guide you, it will save you money in the long run. It will make you more prepared for when things change in your life and when things change outside of your life. Things are changing all the time in the law, in the tax code, and in the financial environment, in the investing world. So you don't always know what you need to know. And that's why you have somebody who knows what they're doing, that lives and breathes this stuff, so that they can help you. The difference between, I hear a lot, why can't I just do my own will? I have a simple situation. It's so much cheaper. I can pay $49.99 through whatever else it is, and I just pre-fill and it becomes a form. And why would I pay anything more than that? And the real simple answer is, you don't know what you don't know. And with estate planning, you don't know what's wrong until it's too late. When things go wrong, you can't fix it. Somebody's already lost capacity to make a change, or they've died and you have what you have and you have to deal with it within this very check-the-box legal system that's not customized for what your specific situation might have been. So it's very tricky. And there's, I want to also say that there's not much of a difference between do-it-yourself wills and an attorney who doesn't know what they're doing, right? So just because somebody's an attorney doesn't mean they know what they're doing. A lot of people say, I do bankruptcy, criminal defense, and sure, I'll make a will. Why wouldn't I? It's just a document, right? There's no real difference there. You might as well pay $49.99 instead of $300 to end up with the same thing. So be aware of who you're working with, and same with tax advisors, same with financial advisors, all your professional team. I always say, go buy your referral. Ask somebody, ask your financial advisor, ask your tax preparer, who do you trust? Because other professionals in this industry, we do know. We do know who we want to send things to. So the do-it-yourself stuff, I'm a do-it-yourselfer. I would rather do my own tile. I would rather make my own decorations. I was talking with another person about how I used to quilt and I used to love, yeah, you can pay for a blanket, but how much more interesting and personalized can it be? That's not the same with your estate plan. That's not the same with your taxes. It gets complicated. And again, you don't know what you don't know, and the consequences can be a lot bigger. If my son's party decorations are off kilter, nobody's going to get hurt. There's not going to be any issue with that. But I use the power of attorney as an example. When you have a power of attorney, someone you've designated to take care of your financial matters, if you're incapacitated, it saves thousands and thousands of dollars. So when people come in and say, all I want is a power of attorney, I usually quote them somewhere in the ballpark of about $300. Why is it so expensive? Because I'm educating them on how to use it so that it's not abused. That's going to take me at least an hour plus document prep plus signing, where I want them to walk away saying, I know what this is. I know when I can use it. I know how to educate the people around me so that I'm in control of my life and nobody takes over before I want them to, and they know what I want. If somebody comes to me, doesn't have a power of attorney, said, Grandma had a stroke, I don't know what to do, we don't know where stuff is, I'm saying we're looking at $3,500, $5,000 in a very simple situation to get the control through the courts to do
to
what you need to
and
do.
Stuff. Yeah.
Get a guardianship, get a conservatorship, not to mention the time and stress trying to figure out what all that means. So the cost savings are just, but again, you don't know that because none of us are going to die, right?
That's right.
Well, I made a deal. Yeah. I'm working with Elon Musk. We're downloading exactly. My consciousness into robotics. So, I'm working that way. But in your experience, I know we've talked with Carl and Chuck, and I were just meeting with folks the other day. It works the same for estate planning as well, right? So if there's a situation where folks are giving you a hard time, they're saying, well, I mean, I have a simple situation. I don't need to trust it. That's going to cost a couple thousand dollars. But if they don't have that situation and they have to go to probate, how much does that cost?
Right. And the costs are, it's not just about what happens to me. It's about how does it impact the people around me. So things that happen all the time is, well, I got a situation that's pretty simple. I mean, my kids, they're, you know, 12 and 14. Okay, well, the probate is one fee. But then you're talking about a guardianship conservatorship of your kids, because if you're under 18, you can't manage that money yourself. So double the cost of the administration side. That's, I would ballpark $10,000 that could have gone straight to your kids' care.
Mm-hmm.
Why spend the money on the fees? That's mm-hmm. that's a heart-wrenching mm-hmm. situation mm-hmm. for me as a practitioner to see. So it's also another thing that, Bo, you and I were chatting about a little bit, is special needs trust, also called supplemental needs trust. It doesn't matter what age, if somebody qualifies for public benefits, a lot of people, whether it's a well-intentioned aunt or uncle, say, well, gosh, you know, Susie, she needs a lot of care. And she's going to really struggle. I want to name Susie as, you know, 10% or 20% or all of the beneficiary of my IRA or of my estate. And that could completely disqualify Susie from the benefits that she depends on. And there are some retroactive ways that you can make sure she doesn't lose all that, but it costs a lot of money. And at the end of the day, there's some big differences in the types of special needs trust you can establish and whether money has to go to the state if there's anything left versus to the people that you want to benefit. So planning ahead, I've just never seen a situation where that doesn't save money if you include the cost of planning.
I totally concur. When we have to, from the tax perspective, when we have to go back and clean up or catch up past filings, and you're talking multiple years, something like that, the price is so much more than if you had set up a good accounting or a good record keeping system up front and we were proactively. It makes our job easier, it's quicker, it's efficient, and it's a better product.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
exactly right. And fixing things is never cheaper.
Yeah,
right.
And the other thing I get a lot too is people saying, that can't you just copy and paste what the last attorney did? Well, that's going to actually cost you more, because if I use my forms that I trust and I've developed, that's the way to keep the cost down.
Mm-hmm. Right, rather than try to figure out what they were doing before. So I don't want to interrupt it. I like where this is going. We have a call on the line. Lee has a big picture tax question. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning to all of you. It looks like there's a changing of the guard at Investing Simplified. Carl and Chuck must be getting too old to get up Saturday morning.
Well, not so much getting too old, or they're smart enough to know that, like I said, Chuck is escaping the cold, and, you know, he's out there. And, you know, we figured we definitely wanted to get a new voice in here, so that's why we're adding folks, always trying to add value. That's our goalie.
Sounds good. So my question is, and it's a big philosophical question, I guess. You've been talking about the tax changes, and I don't make very much income, and I do my own taxes, and the form is sure a whole lot shorter this year, which is nice. But it made barely any difference in my taxes, and like I said, I don't, and I'm talking about the total tax, including the withholdings and all that. And I'm reading that Chuck's has been saying for a couple years at least that, oh, once our debt gets over $20 trillion, we're in big trouble. And I've been reading articles saying, well, now it has rocketed over $20 trillion, thanks in part to the new tax act, which lowered the rate on corporations from something like 35% to 28% or something like that. And, of course, the articles say, yeah, again, it's the corporations and the rich that mostly benefit, and they throw a bone to the little guy, like myself, just to sort of pacify him, but it really hasn't made much difference. So I'm wondering, A, if that's true, according to your professional opinions, and B, it seems like it's just a patch. It's like there's a raging fever in our economy, and it gets little boils, and you just stick a bandage on the boil, but we're not really dealing with the underlying infection. So do you guys have any thoughts on what's really needed in tax reform to solve the problem that we've got going in America here? And I will take your answer offline here, and thanks very much, and congratulations to the new folks on the show.
Well, thank you, Lee. Yes, in the next 20 seconds, I'll be able to solve the...
Looking forward to this.
Exactly. Yeah, time for a break, right? Those are good thoughts and good points, Lee. And hopefully over the last year of our show, maybe you've gathered that, yes, there's good things, there's bad things, there's many different opinions on this. And Chuck is probably the most opinionated of us all, or at least he voices it more. But, yeah. Certainly, if you cut taxes, you probably have to cut spending. I think we realize that, and that may or may not be happening. Who knows? Maybe the budget's going up more or the deficit's going up more. And the age old argument about, does cutting taxes spur the economy and help everybody, so on and so forth. And I have CPA friends across the board who we've discussed this, and trickle down economics work. No, they don't work, so on and so forth. Those are, kind of the things that we certainly have to address.
Yeah, I mean, I think really Chuck's major point is like you said, and Chuck is a big believer in reducing spending to drive that rather than raising taxes. And I think we've talked about, and since I've been on the show, we've talked about it's one of the reasons that I don't want to run for. I don't know what the proper answer is. There's smart people on both sides that have opinions on both sides, and I'm not sure. I think Chuck is, we talk about we. Want to make sure, I think everyone agrees that debt is bad, whether that's in personal debt, individual debt, business debt. I'd much rather fund things with cash. So that's kind of the look on that. I think the shorter form has been great for filers like Lee that are just doing their individual thing. That is a situation where it may be okay to be self-preparing, and you're probably not missing out on a lot of those things as long as you're not missing out on those deductions. So we've got Rob on the line who has an estate tax question. So good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Really enjoying your show. I was wondering what the estate tax rate is on something over $1 million.
In Oregon?
Yes.
All right. Well, you're looking at generally between 10 to 16%. 10% once you go over $1 million of taxable estate, and by the time you hit about $10 million, then you're up near 16%.
Well, I'm about $3 million. I don't plan on dying real quick.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, Rob. That's a good point. Although, again, we can talk later after the show. I can hook you up with Elon if we want to keep that going.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. One other quick question.
Sure.
That's okay.
Yeah, of course.
We have roughly 300,000 in 529 plans for our grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would that figure into the estate tax? Because my wife is the owner. And the grandkids are beneficiaries.
So whether that's considered part of your estate, I know it is your assets when it's considered for financial aid application, which is the reason that it's great that you have that money set aside in there. In terms of, do you have a successor owner on that 529 plan? So does it go automatically from your wife to another owner?
Their parents.
Okay. So I'm not sure. We can check for you. I'm not positive if that's figured into what's considered part of your estate.
I'm kicking myself, Rob, because I just researched this about a month ago for an estate, and I don't remember my answer.
Don't kick too hard.
Okay.
There are a number of things that pass by way of your death that are included that a lot of people don't understand. So life insurance, retirement accounts, things with beneficiaries, those are all included. I think, and we can double check and look this up, I don't think that the 529 plans are, any completed gift is
right.
Not.
That's a good point.
And so if it's a completed gift, then it's, and the benefit and the wonderful thing about 529 plans is that you can have a successor custodian is often what it's called, just as Bo was saying, somebody else who's going to be the owner of it so that it doesn't go outright to the kids right away. It can still be managed the way that you want. But it's a little bit tricky. It's a little bit of that. Well, it does kind of pass by way of my death. But if the especially with Oregon estate taxes, we could talk about this a little more after the break if it's interesting. But there is no gift tax, and so the key is basically if I can just get it out before I die, then it's not going to be subject to that 10% plus. That's not true on the federal side, but again, very few people actually care about that now that the exemption is so high on the federal side.
Right, exactly. So you can take care of the exemption for it. That's a great question, Rob.
And Taylor, you just spurked the answer, and that's absolutely right. 529 is actually a gift, and so it does get it out of your estate. Absolutely, that's the answer.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Good.
Oh, okay. I'm glad we could powwow on that. Thank you, Rob. I didn't know the answer to that.
It.
So, yeah, thank you for calling and thanks for listening, Rob. That's a great question. Yeah. So we're gonna take our last break here, but when we come back, we're gonna continue talking. I think that'd be really interesting for folks to learn a little bit about how to. Maybe some ways to get rid of that Oregon estate tax for the people that are in Oregon. But if you'd like to call, if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, give us a call, please. We'd love to be interrupted. But otherwise, we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us with Investing Simplified. We are back. Now's the time to give us a call. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. We'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, we were just talking in the break about the differences between Oregon and Washington estate tax. They do have different levels. We talked to that. But I'd love, Taylor, you, the expert in that situation, and how to get those, maybe take care of some of those issues, be preventative, use preventative medicine. I like that term that you used earlier, but some issues that you come across in your practice or some ways we can defeat the estate tax.
Yeah. So there's a couple high-level points. One is that the estate tax is not the end of the world. Make sure you have your money to use for yourself, because long-term care is expensive, and a lot of people give stuff away without realizing they're going to need it. People are living longer than they think they ever could. And modern technology, for better and for worse, modern medicine, a lot more people are outlasting their money even when they thought they were absolutely fine. So did you want to jump in?
I did. That's a great point. And I was just going to say, quite often, the 10% Oregon estate tax is less than the income tax. We have to decide many times between which one to go with. And it's like, oh, can't pay estate taxes. Well, that may be a better option than paying your income tax rate. So
exactly right. And back in the day when the federal exemption was more like $1 million, you were looking at an effective tax rate of 50%. That was really different. And if you're over, you know, $11 million, then maybe you need to think about that. But most people who are up in that ballpark are already having some more complex, more advanced tax planning. So for most of us, we don't have to worry about that. And you're really looking at 10%, which is not as bad as people think. So it's not this big, bad monster hiding in the closet waiting for you to pass. But it is a huge revenue maker for the state, Oregon and Washington. So it's not going away. As far as we practitioners can project, there's really no indication that it's going up or that it's changing. One of the things that people don't realize is that Washington also has its own state level of estate tax. The filing is at $2 million. It's a little over paying that. So if you're here in the Portland metro area and you want to double your exemption, you can just move to Washington. Very easy. Lots of benefits from that. So pros and cons, but you can play this game. Gifting is a big piece that, well, a lot of people don't understand. Well, I can't give away more than $15,000 in a year. Well, yes and no. You have to do something. You have to talk to your tax preparer and say, hey, I need to file a gift tax return. So you may pay an additional cost of that gift tax return. But otherwise, you're not actually going to pay any gift. You're unlikely to pay any gift tax on that. That's a federal thing. So if your lifetime gifts and the stuff that passes by way of your death is over the federal exemption, so $5.5 million, you're lucky enough to give away or die with more than $5.5 million, then yeah, you might have to pay some tax on it and you're looking at higher rates. So think about that. Talk to a planner, talk to your tax person. But for, again, most of us, you could basically give away in Oregon, Washington, a lot of your money. And if it doesn't pass, if you don't own it at the day of your death, then that's not going to be subject to that estate tax.
Yeah, that's right. Are we up to, didn't they double that? Isn't that, no, $11 million per person, per gift?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Except, you're right. It's 22 now.
Yeah.
2019
yeah,
numbers. There
right,
we go.
Right,
$11 million per,
so that's,
per person.
Which expires, and that's what a lot of people are saying. Well, that expires. But what I've heard, because unless they keep it going after 2025, but what I've heard in talking with people who swim in those waters, like you said, that's the 1% of the 1% that are,
right,
that are working in that number. But what I've heard is that in the situation, it's just like you said, you can start planning for that now. What I've been told and what the IRS has said, I think, is, as far as I know, is that if you are operating under the $22 million and if you're giving it away even in 2024, then the statute expires and it pops back down to $5 million. That's inflated because they inflate it every year, but whatever the number is at that point, they're not going to track you down, is what I understand.
That's the big scary monster, the clawback.
Right.
The clawback is coming. Yes and no, right? They could always claw it back. They can always change the rules. That's the hard thing, is that you don't know until you know, and you gotta, one of the other things that I, two points to that, is talk to your estate planner. Things change. This is one of those things you may or may not be paying attention to. A lot of people right now are dying with wills that were prepared with lower tax rates and forcing an administration that doesn't make sense anymore. So if you haven't checked out your estate plan really in the last 8 years, you need to see somebody about it, because it's probably outdated on the tax side. And if you read it, it's all gobbledygook to you. Like, it's gobbledygook to me, and I have to parse it out, because a lot of these are just, how does this, this doesn't make sense. That's not English, right? You don't look at it and say, oh, I have an outdated estate plan. You look at your kids' names. Yeah, that's the same. Everything to my kids. Okay, check. This is stuff that is very hard to understand. So just have somebody look at it and say, you can really simplify this. It doesn't need to be this complicated anymore.
That's pretty funny, Taylor. I can't tell you how many times Carl has emailed me, and within 30 seconds, I get a phone call from him, and he's like, let's read this together. What does this mean? And it's a provision from a trust or a will, and
yes,
we're trying to figure it out.
Yes, right. There was a
and it's
lot
old.
More. Yeah, exactly. The older documents, there's just been a real shift in how you prepare your forms now. So having newer documents can really simplify, save on costs, because those phone calls, those are hard when you have to have a CPA and an attorney sitting down and reading it line by line to make sure you're following what it says. It gets complicated. So,
probably expensive at that point too, because,
and more expensive.
Right. So it's easier just if you're reviewing it. So is there, I don't want to call it a rule of thumb or a hard and fast rule, but for folks, I get this question a lot, because one of the first things we do, Chuck and I do in our fact finder with a client, is ask, do you have a will or a trust set up? Do you have advance directives, mm-hmm, medical directives, durable power of return? Do you have all that stuff set up? Have you met with somebody? And a lot of times we get, oh, yeah, I took care of that. Well, how long has it been since, you know, how long has it been since you had that reviewed? Is there, I don't want to call it a rule of thumb, but in your experience, is there an amount of time? You said 8 years for an estate plan for the tax side, but I would imagine, obviously, anytime big changes happen, you want to talk to somebody, but just in those situations you talked about, nothing's really changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just plugging along. Kids are still the same. We want to send everything to the kids. So is there kind of a thought that you have on that?
I would say 5 years is the longest you want to go without a phone call. So, or a face-to-face if you're more comfortable that way, but at least a phone call. Have your attorney stop whatever they're doing, look at your stuff enough that they have to look you in the face and not just email or do a quick, yeah, you're fine. But actually sit down or talk and say, I just want to make sure everything I've got makes sense. So 5 years is about the longest you'd want to be.
Perfect. That's a great answer. So we had a great show today, Taylor. Thanks for being in. How does somebody get a hold of you?
You can call me, 503-878-8948. I'm with KG Law Group. You can also look us up at kglawgroup.com.
Kevin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
503-666-5569, and we're at baker-colson.com.
And as always, Chuck and I are at pfgwm.com, 503-253-3000. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. God bless. Rise.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365 and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.